Good. So this is our last meeting in this session, and I'll say a little bit about the what we can look forward to. I actually want to bring up several practical matters, I guess. So first of all, last week I mentioned the revision of the website, and that's about 80% done now, so you might like to visit it and see what it looks like. There's two points, main points. One is that these discussions are now part of the general discussion area, and in fact there is only the general discussion area, and there's no password access required. Everybody can just see it, which I like very much, because when someone goes to the discussion area of TSK of the CCI site now, there's activity, and we know there's activity, but other people haven't known that, and I think it's very helpful. The phone calls and orientations are still password protected, so you still need to be a member of the class to enter those, but the discussions are not. Let's see. The other thing about that is that we've done away with categories in the discussion area, and we've replaced it with tags. And there's a little feature which doesn't quite work right yet, but you can see the idea. Down on the right-hand side, if you go to the discussions page, you will see all these words in variable sizes. You may have noticed that on websites in the last 6 months or so. I know I have. And so we have now joined that innovation. So you'll see these words. Some of them are large, some of them are small. And those words are the tags. And so I had a work-study student go through and tag our past discussions. So you'll see a big tag for time and a small tag for Aryadeva, for instance. Kathleen's asking if I want to share my desktop and show everyone. And actually, that's a great idea, but I think it would take too much time. So go take a look for yourselves. The tags are supposed to work like this. If you click on one of those words, it takes you to the posts and comments that are tagged with that word. That part doesn't work yet. If you click on one of the tags, you just get a blank page. So we're trying to figure out why that is. So we're in progress here. But when that works, it should be very nice. And so when you post something, you can choose from one of the tags that already exists, or you can add your own tag. And that will be in place of choosing the category that you want this to appear in. So this is all great technological breakthroughs that I hope will help make everything more friendly for those of us who are in this program, and also for people who come and visit the site and would like to look around. So that's what's going on right now. And I will mention that because I see Caroline's video, I see Caroline. It's nice because I have someone to react when I say things. It's kind of helpful for me. If anybody else wants to get on video, but not essential. Okay, a reminder: we're going to have a practice day on January 13th, and so I will. I will post some guidance, some suggestions for the practices to be doing. There aren't going to be any big surprises. It's going to be reviewing some of the practices and approaches we've been investigating. I will look through and see if there's something, something additional, but basically that. However, I do intend to say a little more about the sequence of exercises that have to do with the past, present, future structure of time, which are taken from the first TSK book. I believe it's exercises 21, 18 through 22, 18 through 22. And I'll have a little bit to say about that. So there'll be a little guidance on how to do these practices, And then the idea on January 13th is that we meet at the usual time, right now, and people will discuss the exercises. So there won't be any formal content. We'll just be reviewing experience with the exercises. Probably not do an exercise at that time. So it'll be what you've been working with. And I encourage you also to use the discussion area for sharing your experiences with the exercises. I think that could be really helpful. So that's January 13th. Then we start the first class. Oh, and I should say the practice, that area, that topic for the practice, the discussion of the practices, that will be password protected too. So it's only for the people who are taking this program. Then the next session starts on February 3rd. And as I mentioned last week, we've spent our 6 weeks this time going through the two chapters that really focus on the past, especially this chapter focuses on the past. And the next 3 weeks, or the first 3 weeks of the next session, will be about the future. It will be the chapter on the future. And then the material after that is, really invites us to start rethinking time as a whole on the basis of having investigated the past and the present and the future. So that's what we'll be doing. A reminder that there's going to be a workshop at Rock Na Ling in August. So please be thinking about that and whether there's a way that you can work that into your schedule. It would be great, I think, if we could come together and practice. And a very early I keep wanting to say warning, that's not the right word. A very early pointer that in the summer of 2014, I don't have the exact days in front of me, but they actually have been picked. So that's 2 years or a year and a half from now, we're going to be doing an intensive in England, which Caroline is largely responsible for organizing. So many thanks. So those of you who are in Europe should be thinking about that, or those of you who'd like to go to Europe in the summer of 2014. We set it up that far ahead because I have to go to Europe anyway in 2014. So we thought, well, let's use the time.
Jack, I have the dates if people want to write them down.
Okay.
27th to 31st of August.
Okay, great. Thank you. And we'll put that information up on the website too. We're going to be sending out a newsletter in January, which lists the all these things we've just talked about pretty much. So you'll get that. And also we'll put it on the website. Okay, and one more practical thing, and then we can start going through these last few pages and what they suggest and the possibilities they open. One more thing is that when I post the guidance, I guess I'll call it, for the exercises, I'm also going to post one little bonus reading that I've used in other classes before, but actually not in TSK ever. It's the section, the very famous section from Proust's Remembrance of Things Past on the Madeleine, when he dips his a Madeleine into his tea, and that suddenly throws him back into a very vivid memory of his childhood. I realized a couple of years ago, I went back and read that, and I realized that it's actually a wonderful description. It's a wonderful sort of phenomenological description of, how he does this. It's not as though it just automatically happens, but he really looks into his experience in a very specific way. So I think it's relevant to what we're doing, and I'm going to post that. I'll just mention now that it's very interesting from our in terms of our interests that book Remembrance of Things Past, which is part of this larger multi-volume novel that Proust wrote called Swan's Way. Remembrance of Things Past is the title that was given to it when it was first translated, I think back in the 1920s or possibly 1930s, and that's how it's generally known. But within the last 10 years or 15 years, there's been a new translation of it. What I will post is the old translation, but there's been a new translation, and the title matches the French much more closely, and the title is In Search of Lost Time. And I think that that difference points towards two ways of relating to time. Remembrance of things past is very much related to a kind of linear version, it seems to me. And In Search of Lost Time is it's an invitation to look at things differently. So I'll post that, and if you have any comments on it, use the discussion area for that. Okay. Any questions about all those practical things? Then let's talk about the reading. So the point that Rinpoche makes here in the beginning, and we've got about 2 pages here, the point that Rinpoche makes in the beginning is that this past, present, future structure is something that's fundamental in some way. Now, it's not fundamental in the way that we usually think of it. Or our usual interpretation of it doesn't seem right. That's what we've been exploring. But it's fundamental in the sense that you can't just say, well, I'm going to get rid of the past, or I'm going to get rid of the future, and just live in the present. And you certainly can't say, well, I'm just going to live in the future, or I'm just going to live in the past, even though we talk about people who get very engaged with their memories, and we say they live in the past, or perhaps you could say, sometimes we'd say of someone, he lives in a fantasy world that might be related, at least, to the idea of living in the future. But that's pretty much of a metaphor. The fact is that we do our living in the present, but we can't just live only in the present either, because the present is intimately tied to the past and the future. And that's, this is not news. We've been exploring this, but that's what Rinpoche is emphasizing here. And there's a nice line on the top of page 89 where he says, between future unborn and past passed away, the transition does not stay. That is to say, the present is a transition between the past and the future, and it doesn't have its own substance. It's a transition, and the whole point of the present is that it's passing on, it's moving on, it's presenting us, and in that act of presentation, it's gone. And then there's a new present. And the very fact that we single out one present moment and then the next present moment and so on, it makes sense in terms of describing our experience, but it also points to the fact that there really isn't a present moment to hold on to. There's no content. As there's a Tibetan text where a Lama speaks about this, and he says you can't hold on to the past because it's already gone. You can't hold on to the future because it's not here yet. And as far as the present, too late. It's just there. It's only a transition. So the fact that we like to say, well, the present is where we live, the present is where we are present, at some level, there's truth in that, and we have to investigate that or understand it more clearly. But it is not it is not a moment that has any substance or that has any identity. So Rinpoche has written, I believe, I've certainly heard him say, but I believe it's in one of his more recent books, He talks about this phrase that was very popular in the 1970s, so before most of you were born, no doubt. But in the 1970s, be here now, right? This was kind of the anthem in some ways of the spiritual dimension of the counterculture at that time. And Rinpoche says, well, people say be here now, but they don't understand be, and they don't understand here, and they don't understand now. And in some ways, you could see TSK as a kind of a response to that. You know, let's get clear about the be and the here and the now, and let's see if we can, you know, what it means to recognize that our usual understanding there doesn't work. Now, you can bring that up to date, something that is much more currently popular, not a slogan so much, but the interest that is really very widespread right now, especially in therapy and therapeutic circles, in mindfulness, right? Mindfulness, a Buddhist meditation practice, but people have really been adapting it in a number of different ways to deal with issues like stress. It's taught to school children, it's taught to prisoners. Mindfulness-based stress reduction is the particular field that we may have talked about this before. The military also uses it, although they give it a more military-sounding name, but you know, like mindfulness-based combat readiness or something like that. It's valuable. It's good for people. It helps people be present. But it's based on this notion that you can be in the present in a way that cuts off the past and the future, and that just isn't the case. The past and the future are implicated in the present, and there have been a lot of criticisms made from within the Buddhist community or the community of Buddhist scholars. I mean, some Buddhists say that exactly. This is great mindfulness. You know, being present, bare attention is a term that's sometimes used. But a lot of other scholars have said, and some practitioners, there's something wrong about this notion that mindfulness is just throwing away the past and the future, throwing away, because that's where meaning comes from, that's where value comes from, that's where intention comes from. And imagining that you can live in this kind of point instant of the present. And we've been looking at that. There's a pretty extensive discussion of this point in Love of Knowledge, in part two of Love of Knowledge, for those of you who'd like to look at it more. So that's why we've been emphasizing a couple of different ideas over these 6 weeks, a couple of different practices, I guess we could say. One is to be aware of the past, present, future structure of each moment, and I know people have been exploring that and writing some interesting posts in the discussion area. So to be aware of the fact that every moment has its past, it's has a threefold nature, you could say. Even though it's centered in the present, there's always a past dimension and a future dimension to it, and we've been trying to look at that. And then the other thing we've looked at is the notion of lineage, which basically says that every moment that arises carries a kind of living lineage. It's a heritage. You know, we are always the inheritors of our own past. And one of the things that is important to understand there in terms of, and that's why I think the term is lineage is a good term, it's important to understand that lineage is, it's changing from moment to moment. So, you know, if I'm, so here we are in this class, and then, so there's a lineage to our being here, and I'm actually going to ask us to look at that as a kind of practice in a moment. But if after this I go out to get breakfast, which in fact I will. When I'm in the restaurant having breakfast, It will be the lineage of that moment will be completely different. And another way to say that is the past of that moment and the future of that moment will be very different from the past and future of this moment. And that realization is very much linked to rejecting the idea of identity. Or, I should never really say rejecting. TSK is not about rejecting things exactly, but understanding the limitation of the idea of identity. At the very bottom of page 88, Rinpoche says, "Nor can we cling tightly to the present of our present identity, proclaiming our independence of the past and our indifference to the future." And that's what we tend to do. We assign ourselves and we assign our world, for that matter, a present identity, and we say that that's what's manifesting in the present moment. But there's a kind of an inherent contradiction there. I mentioned this last week, that the word identity actually means sameness. I mean, the root, the etymology of the word, the ID and id just means this, right? So identity actually means sameness, and that means it has to be the same as something else, right? It's the same as what came before. And actually, I looked in a different etymological dictionary this week, and the suggestion is made, nobody's completely sure, but the suggestion is made that not only does identity mean sameness, but that at a more fundamental level than that even, it means repetition. It comes from the Latin is identitum, identitum, meaning repetition. Somebody's wanting to make sure we don't repeat things here by introducing a new element of sound. Okay. So, not identity, a constantly changing past, present, future structure. So what I'd like to ask you to do, and this is a little tricky now, but what I'd like to ask you to do in these next few minutes is do the practice of being aware of the kind of past and future shadows of the present. I'm thinking it looks like this sound, this background noise, right, okay. The background noise is getting in the way. I'm getting a message here saying it's actually hard to hear me. I think, Brigitte, it's coming from you. Could that be? Because you're shown as the one who's speaking. So if it is Brigitte, maybe you could figure out a way to stop it. There's a lot of kind of, I don't know what it is. But if it's anybody else, okay, Brigitte. Well, I don't know. It sounds like somebody's busy doing things, moving things around, and there's people talking, and bells ringing. Well, maybe it's not Brigitte, but it's something going on. Okay, very interesting. We don't know what it is. Kathleen says she's trying to mute Brigitte, which in theory she should be able to do because she's all powerful. But Brigitte is using some magic, or whoever's taken over. Okay, well, okay, now Brigitte's muted, but there's still noise. Well, she was for a moment. Okay, let's just go on as well as best we can. I hope it doesn't affect your ability to understand what I'm saying.
Could you tell us again what you want us to do?
Yeah, I was
Not
just in
just.
the middle of it. I'm sorry. I'm going to go back to it now. Yeah, it's simple. So there's this notion of past, present, future structure of each moment, and that's a specific exercise, and I've encouraged you to do it. I want you to do it now, as I talk, and if other people speak up too, of course. So, for instance, it may be that in the past, present, future structure of this moment includes the fact that a couple of minutes ago we were having some problems with noise. That may be what figures into your past, present, future structure. It may be a part of the past, and may not. Maybe something else. But what I'm suggesting is that right now, and I actually have a great fondness for this sort of thing, to do a practice as we continue with the discussion. You know, the point of this practice of looking at past, present, future structures is, I shouldn't say the point, but one possible way of doing it is to investigate it just in your ordinary activity and whatever you're doing. And this meeting, penetrating and insightful as it no doubt is for everybody, is also just an ordinary activity that people can engage in. So what I'm asking you to do is right now, as we're speaking about it, to be looking at the past, present, future structure. And I'm going to go on and say a little bit more, sort of move on to another point. But then in a few minutes, I'm going to stop and ask people to reflect on and then comment on what they found as they engage this very present experience in terms of a past, present, future structure. So, is that clear?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. So, the idea here is that we are giving up on our own identity. And it's also true that when we give up with our identity, give up on our identity, we have to give up on a certain understanding of what it means to know something or to know something new. Because our usual model is that we are the ones who understand. We are the ones who know. And if, for instance, I'm listening to, I'm speaking and you're listening to me, the model is that maybe I will say something that leads you to see things in a new way. Or maybe I will just tell a story, and so now you will have this new story in your vast collection of things you've heard and remember, at least for the moment. That's an identity-based view of understanding. It's, you know, here I am, this is me, this is my identity, and now my identity is going to expand a little bit. You know, it's going to kind of absorb this new piece of knowledge. That's one way of understanding what goes on when we know something or understand something or have an insight. But, of course, it excludes the possibility that we could know something completely new, because it always has to be incorporated in almost a literal sense. It almost has to be incorporated into our existing identity. The past, present, future structure is very different from that, because we're not, it's not our identity. It's not the past as the source of our identity. It's not the future as the source of our intentions, you could say. It's that as each moment comes up, it implicates its own past and its own future. I'm actually quoting here from that on page 89, in the first full paragraph, three lines down. Or let's read a little bit more of that paragraph. To be and to be alive, I must connect with the full dynamic of time. And so what I'm suggesting is that an identity-based understanding does not connect with the full identity of time, because we're trying to hold on, as Rinpoche says, we're trying to cling tightly to the present of our own present identity. That doesn't work. To be and to be alive, I must connect with the full dynamic of time. Coming to the future from the past, letting go of the past to open to the future, in the vital here-ness of the actual, I implicate both past and future, which are here with me. So that's a different a model. It's just a description, but it's a description of what it means to be doing, to be engaging past the past, present, future structure of the moment. It's the vital here-ness that implicates both past and future. It's very different from the usual sense that that there is an identity which kind of is spread out across time, and that's me. So let's stop there, and I want to give you a chance to reflect on and comment on the practice that you were doing. So there's the content of what I've just been saying, which I hope has some value and interest, and may lead to a different kind of understanding. But there's also your experience of practicing what we've been talking about, the past, present, future structure of each moment. So I'm going to be silent for a couple of minutes here, not because this is the time that we're practicing, as is usually the case when I'm silent, but because I'd like you to reflect on that and then comment on it, either when we start up again by speaking or in the chat area. So a couple of minutes of silence.
Jack.
Yes.
I had a Hayward.
Yes.
In order for me to understand the sentences that you were speaking, I had to have a sense of past. It was as though the words were coming out, but to follow the sentence, I had to have a sense of past. And I found that my sense of future was an experience of some kind of anticipation about where this was going to go, where this pointed, what was going to be explained or conveyed. There was anticipation about the future and meaning from the past.
Right, that makes a lot of sense, and notice that there's a couple of different dimensions there, so. Often when Western thinkers write about time, they use the example of music. And for exactly the reason I think that you were pointing towards, if I'm saying something, in order for you to understand that what I'm saying, it clearly isn't enough to just listen to the moment, try to get to the little smallest point, I'm going to say sound, but in fact, you listen to the s, and then you listen to the uh, and then you listen to the m, and then you listen to the d, and you get sound. No, that's not how it works at all. You have to listen to the word sound across time, and more than that, you have to listen to the sentence. You need to be holding in your mind the idea that the sentence is conveying, and not only that, but you need to be holding in your mind some sense of the whole, dynamic of this presentation, both today, as we've been discussing, as we've been, holding this session, but also the way that we've been engaging these teachings over the last several weeks, and your previous connection, the past goes way, way far back. And your sense of the past, present, future structure, the way you engage time in that, may include any or all of those. And you know, it's less clear with the future because the future is by definition a kind of indeterminate thing. So it's hard to single out this part and that part and this part. But it does, there is an immediacy. You're waiting for the sentence to end and you're kind of projecting where it may be going, and then you're and then the projection extends out into time and becomes more vague and indefinite as it goes along. So there's all those different dimensions. Okay, I'm seeing that people are not really writing anything now in terms of comments. So maybe anybody want to say? Oh, okay, here's something from Michael. So when Jack talks about time, he paints a picture of time, referring to the future. Soon I'll ask you to the past, models in play, and thereby extends the felt temporal range of time. He also takes on the identity of the thinker and absolves me as the listener of feeling too stuck in any particular backwater of time, and therefore rescued from my own identity as one who anticipates and remembers my own obsessions. Well, that's interesting. The relationship between, you know, the one who speaks and the one who listens, is interesting because it seems to me true that when I speak, and this is not just me, when anybody speaks, they've got their own temporal dynamic at work. They're headed somewhere, right? They have something to say. I mean, it may be very trivial, or it may be very engaging, but they have something to say. And the person who's listening, at least to some extent, is taking on their temporal structure. Now, if you are having a conversation and, you know, it's just a kind of a standard conversation where people maybe have some information to communicate, but don't have too much to say, then maybe you don't get very involved with the other person's, the content of what the other person says, but really I'm thinking more now the temporal dynamic of what that person is saying. But it seems to me this is in fact what exactly why we go to listen to somebody. You know, this is an example, this class, but it might be, let's say you go to listen to a lecture or a talk on the radio or the internet, and you know, the very notion of saying, well, this person is an interesting speaker. You say, well, why are they an interesting speaker? Well, because they catch you up. They engage you. There is something about the dynamic of what they're presenting that lets you shift out of your own, as Michael says here, your own obsessions, or you know, your own standard ways of making sense of things, the temporal order that you usually occupy. The speaker lets you shift out of that. And you find yourself inhabiting a different order, and it's very, almost by definition, it's really interesting because it's not yours, you know. To a greater or lesser extent, let's say it's interesting. So that's a good, that's a very,
Jack,
yeah.
Jack,
Yes,
Jack,
yes.
in some ways to listen seems like it's to travel with.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right. You step into a stream of time, you might say. You get carried along. By someone else's, by the dynamic of someone else's temporality. There's an interesting line at at the bottom of page 88, about 8 lines up, where he's talking about. Well, actually, we'll say something more about what he's talking about in a moment. But right now, just to quote the line, he says. He talks about the powerful temporal dynamic of unity within multiplicity. So there's this dynamic, right? And that dynamic is unfolding in a variety of ways. That's the multiplicity. But there's also a unity to it, which has to do with the past, present, future structure. And when someone else speaks, that's an opportunity to engage their unity, not yours. Right? That's not exactly the right way to say it, because when we do it in terms of identity, you know, this person, that person, my past, present, future, their past, present, future, that's already robbing time of some of its powerful dynamic. Nonetheless, you could say it's like traveling to a foreign country, right? Everything is kind of inherently more interesting, which is one reason people like to travel. Well, you know, listening to someone else is traveling with that person, and it does give you a little bit more of a handle, a little bit more of a way into the temporal dynamic of unity within multiplicity. So let me look. There's, of course, a couple of different things I'd like to say, and we don't really have time. Well, let me knock, because I see that Bruce has made a comment. I really do want to honor people's comments. So Bruce says, I had a similar experience to Hayward's, past giving meaning and identity, future showing up as anticipation. I also had a sense that our spoken words move in a different time than our thinking. There is a kind of whole meaning which contains a content and a direction, but it takes time, particular time and rhythm of time, to unfold it in spoken words. Yeah, it's very true. It's really interesting to listen. I think I mentioned here before, maybe not. There's a show you can listen to on the radio. It's a, you know, especially in this country, National Public Radio, but it's also available on the internet. You can download at least the current version, called Selected Shorts, and it's people reading short stories. And that would be a very good place to experiment with that, because in a story, of course, you're invited to get caught up in a particular temporal dynamic. And part of what makes a story work might be, again, and this is kind of in the direction of a theory of literature, which I'm not quite ready to take on, but part of the reason that literature speaks to us, as we say, might be because it invites us to enter a different temporal dynamic. Okay, well, let me make a couple of points really quickly, and then we'll stop. The first is this paragraph we were just looking at the bottom of page 89. It starts off by saying, experience tells us strongly that we are alive and vital, active and responsible, and we find this story convincing. But the story itself could be seen as a telling set down in advance by time past, or perhaps a continuing display manifested by time future. Now, this is a very subtle point, and it's really worth thinking about. So I encourage you to go back and reflect on this point, because what he's saying is that we imagine that we are in fact in touch with the dynamic of time. But it may be that that dynamic, you know, this, as he says, this alive, vital, active, responsible sense of ourselves in the world is only the imitation of time's dynamic. It's actually a story. You know, so we've been talking about stories and how they do have their own powerful dynamic. But in fact, that dynamic only imitates the dynamic of time, even while it's, you know, feeding on that dynamic. So a story unfolds, that is an event in time, but the time of the story is something else. The time of the story is something different. And what Rinpoche is saying here is that that may be what our sense of our own aliveness is, that it's not actually the dynamic of time. That it's a deception. And he says that very strongly at the end of this paragraph. It says, he says, when we, well, I won't read that. He says, echoing down the passageway that runs between past and future, these claims of independence sound with overtones of subterfuge and desolation. So it's a kind of a deception that we work on ourselves, or at least that's what he's suggesting here. Very interesting point. And so then the question becomes, can we see through that? And that's what we're really investigating here. I mean, so first you need to ask yourself, to what extent is that true? And then you need to ask yourself, if so, what can we do about it? And we're already experimenting with that in the practices we've been doing, and this whole way of investigating the structure and nature of time. These are all possible ways to penetrate this false claim of aliveness in favor of a more fundamental aliveness. And there are times in our lives when we do feel more fundamentally alive, which is, you could say, evidence and a clue to the fact that our usual way of being alive doesn't quite capture it, doesn't quite get it, is not quite the real thing. There is a point I wanted to make about, it's actually something that Rinpoche says at the beginning, just before the reading we had. It was from a leftover from last week. So let me point to the sentence, and maybe I'll write something about this because we are out of time. But I think it might be helpful. So maybe I will just add that instead of an orientation, it will be a reflection or something, along with the guidance about the exercises. The sentence I'm looking at is on page 88, second full paragraph at the beginning. When the past-centered identities, that's what we've been talking about, the past-centered identities of each moment shape our present responses, when that happens, emotionality builds. And he gives several examples. He calls it neurosis as the paragraph goes on. He talks about dullness, depression, apathy, blindness, emptiness, sudden shifts. The question that I'll explore a little in my reflection, and you can explore in your own thought, is, why should that be? Why? What's the link between emotionality and this kind of denial of the dynamic of time, which masquerades as affirming the dynamic of time? Why should that manifest in emotionality? So we don't have time to go into that right now. I'll write a little bit about it. And again, feel free to comment about these things. So that's it. We're going to stop for this session. We will not be starting up again with the future until well into the future, until the beginning of February. So you'll have a whole holiday season to work with these ideas. But I will be posting some things, and we will have our session on January 13th. So enjoy your time, and I wish you a happy new year. And we will meet again then, those of you who wish to continue.